Right, right. Senate Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness will come to order. Colleagues, the first thing we're going to do is an organizational meeting to adopt the rules, which are the same from the other committees. And then for those members of the audience, due to other commitments in other committees, we're going to hear SB 1523 first, and then we're going to move to 1512 second, and then the last bill will be 1524. As you see, they're all scheduled for public hearings and possible work sessions. It's the chair intent, if there's a majority, to carry 1512 and 1523 out of the committee down to Ways and Means, if everybody agrees. And 1524, we will probably carry over till the next meeting, because there's still discussions with that. With that, I'm going to open an organizational meeting on the rules. The rules are the same that we have typically had before. Does anybody need to have them reviewed and make our new administrator here work? No, I guess not. So you're out on that one. Madam Vice Chair, if you would, please.
Chair Bokus, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated today, February 2nd, 2016.
Madam Vice Chair, Mona Sanders moves to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 2, 2016. Is there any further discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered. With that, we'll close the organizational meeting. We're going to open a public hearing on 1523. If you would, please, Mr. Roper.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 1523 would create a short-term grant program to be developed and administered by the Office of Emergency Management in consultation with the Oregon Department of Transportation to permit the withdrawal of fuel by specified personnel from certain fuel storage facilities in an emergency. We do have a fiscal and revenue impact statement on this bill. Those are both on OLIS. There's a -1 amendment that would require the fire marshal to check installation of connectors financed by grant funds as part of existing annual inspections already performed.
And colleagues, if you recall, we've had several hearings on this bill, this concept. We had the legislative concept last time around, and in the short session, we're moving forward. The basic genesis of the bill is after a decade of working on emergency preparedness, one of the critical shortfalls we have found is getting emergency vehicles fuel. And we've determined through work groups and various public testimony in the past that the best way to get that is out of card locks, which are in the ground and range from 100,000 to 500,000 gallons underneath the ground. And, of course, the only time you would ever access that would be in any catastrophic emergency, which means there is no incentive or plan or anything along that line to be able to have them prepared. The bill that's before us now basically allows for a grant, a very small grant, which Mr. Stuckey is going to explain, for a prioritized list primarily at the card lock so that we can identify locations that emergency services would be able to use. And then, of course, the power generation to ever pull that fuel out of the ground would come from the military department, Department of Transportation, and other government entities. With that, Mr. Stuckey, if you would, please.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, I'm Dave Stuckey, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. Happy to be here today and discuss this this bill, this identified gap. Chair Boquist, we fully support this in terms of this a gap that exists out there with the liquid fuels. I've had this opportunity to address this committee before on this concept. Should this legislation move forward, we certainly would be committed to doing everything possible in order to make this successful. There is a time and staff resource component to this. We put in a minimal fiscal. We believe that we can manage this out of height if this legislation moves forward. We believe that there's a collaborative effort going on here with Oregon Department of Transportation, as well as Oregon State Forest Marshal's Office. I mean, ultimately, the industry is going to be the one that signs up for this. They're the ones that are going to raise their hands and say, we would like to have this pigtail or this generator capability, wired capability, at their facility. So it's the owners and the managers that are going to make this decision. But what we're going to try and do if this legislation moves forward is develop this rail in order to allow this to occur. It's about 4,000, up to 4,000 per card lock, and the way the legislation's written now. We would look and assess where those priority areas are. ODOT has done some excellent work in terms of the lifelines and the transportation component and where they need it. The beauty to this card lock, and Senator Boquist brought this group of people together the last session, is the card locks provide that diesel. They provide that capability that doesn't exist. You go up to a Chevron retail gas station, you're going to see gas and a little diesel. Card locks is exactly the inverse of that. And that's that diesel that we need to put in ODOT's bulldozers to clear the roads or military department or wherever that may be. And so bottom line is should the legislation move forward, we're committed to creating and developing this process to fit this gap. With that, I'll happy to answer any questions.
Madam Vice Chair, comments or thoughts or questions?
No, this has come before us, Mr. Chair, come before us before. At least very familiar to me, so thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Senator Courtney, questions? Senator Olds?
Yes, thank you very much. This is a great idea. We're actually moving forward. But one of the things I look at in this bill, and I don't see, is you can call a tank truck a storage facility because it's got the fuel oil in it. Is this bill incorporated anything to allow us to go directly from a tank truck to a vehicle that needs the fuel?
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, and Senator Olson, the way I'm interpreting this is this is about power generation at a fixed site. If we're at a tanker, yes, there would be a separate power component to push that fuel out of that tanker, but odds are that's going to be a part of that existing fuel or rig. So I'm looking at this as the generation where in the end, it's going to take probably a lion's share of a lot of different organizations. Military is one of them that's going to help supply those generators that it takes to put in these fixed sites, and being able to incorporate those fixed sites and know where those are at and what those mean in terms of the lifelines and where we need those the road networks up and running is what's going to be critical. And our hope is to just plant this right into our Raptor program inside Office Emergency Management. I think you've seen that, Senator Olson. And we want to know that ahead of time. We want to know, okay, boom, 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 there's the sites, there's where we potentially can get fuel. We still have to assess it. We still have to determine whether or not we're capable of doing that. Plop a generator in. We can pump fuel into these bulldozers and get moving.
Follow-up, please. Does this bill allow for direct access to the storage tank in case there is a disruption of a broken fuel line?
Chair Boquist, Senator Olson, I think that piece it still probably could be discussed a little bit. I didn't review it from that standpoint. I assume that there's it's implicit that the owners, again, if the owners and the managers of these card locks want to sign up for this, that access will be available in times of emergency. And ultimately, what we're dealing with here is a liquid fuel shortfall across this
right.
State. And you know the aviation, and you've been a part of the aviation component a lot. They will be able to help bring in a lot, and we'll have some great fuel bladder farms. But immediate on-the-spot response before we can get that infrastructure and that rail built to help support citizens, fuel's already sitting there. We just need to get a generator to it.
Mr. Chair, this is a great start. This is really good legislation, but I still think we have some holes, and
sure.
They're easy holes to plug.
Sure.
Such as if a card lock, if there is a disruption of the supply system from the tank up, you know, you're talking to go through a fueling pump. If there's a disruption there, how do you get the fuel out of the tank? We need to look at that, and also the fact that we need to be able to look at being able to go directly from a tank truck into vehicles. As another means of being able to supply, because if we have an earthquake, a lot of these tanks are going to be ruined.
Chair Boquist, Senator Olson, there's some good points. The shake could adjust certain parameters in terms of. But at the same time, those truckers that sit out there and those trucks that have those, I think that power. I'm not an expert
yep.
in the trucking industry, but that power already is a part of and a component to that big that vehicle and that storage capability as opposed to a fixed site on the ground.
Okay, thank you.
Sir.
And just for the record, Senator, so you know, in the work groups that are involved about that, most of the major transporters and most of the major entities involved in this discussion and this type of situation here do, in fact, once an emergency is declared, have the ability to transfer that fuel. It's
okay.
The deal is we need the governor to declare the emergency. You remember we set up in this committee and went through over a series of times so that it gives the power to the governor to declare that emergency. Plus, it allows us to come in and regulate it, too. But so they're actually working that direction.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Madam Vice Chair, questions? Senator Courtney, questions? Is there anyone else that wants to testify? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on 1523 and open a work session on 1523.
Chair Boquist, I move to adopt the -1 amendments dated February 1st, 2016. And could we just have it reviewed what the -1 amendments do?
Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves to adopt the -1 amendment dated February 1, 2016. If you would kindly review the -1 amendment so that she.
Sure. So simply put, I have that the Dash 1 amendment requires the fire marshal to check the installation of connectors financed by grant funds as part of its existing annual inspections already performed.
Thank you.
And colleagues, if you remember, what we're trying to do is figure out how not to have a fiscal on this and how to get this the most efficient and cost-effective way. The fire marshals do an annual inspection now and sometimes more than annual and go in and do this. And the goal was to try and add this to the checklist so that they could take 2 or 3 minutes versus task someone to drive out there and do all this sort of paperwork back and forth. Is there further discussion on the Dash 1s? Is there opposition to the Dash 1s? Dash 1s will be moved into the main bill. Madam Vice Chair.
Chair Boglis, I move Senate Bill 1523 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Madam Vice Chair, Mona Sanderson moves Senate Bill 1523 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion, committee members? Is there any opposition? If so ordered, the bill will go to Ways and Means. With that, I will close the work session on 1523, and I will go back to the top of the calendar and open a public hearing on 1512. Ms. Roper, if you would please give us a preview of this one, because this is just before our committee the first time.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so Senate Bill 1512 would permit certain bond proceeds to be used for surveying and engineering evaluations and associated costs that are reasonably necessary for administration of the seismic rehabilitation grant program. There are no amendments for this bill. It does have a sub-referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Thank you. And obviously, you're going to tell us about it.
Chair Boglis, committee members, my name is Robert Alt. I am the Assistant Director at Business Oregon's Infrastructure Finance Authority. I'm here to speak with you about the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program and Senate Bill 1512. In the 2015 session, Business Oregon discussed the need for additional staff to additional staff for the Seismic Retrofit Grant Program. At the time, the agency intended to use bond proceeds to fund those additional positions. Our bond counsel and the Department of Justice attorneys later concluded that the language in the statute wasn't clear as to whether we could use bond proceeds for administrative costs. Because it was relatively late in the 2015 session, we decided to discuss this in the 2016 session. Senate 1512 is the fix the Legislative Council, Bond Council, the Department of Justice, Legislative Fiscal Office, and Business Oregon agree will clarify the statute to allow bond proceeds to be used for administrative costs for this program. If I may, I'd like to give you about a 2-minute overview of the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program. The mission of the Seismic Rehabilitation Grant Program is to provide grant funds to seismically retrofit public service buildings. That includes K-12 school buildings, community colleges, educational service districts. It also includes hospitals, sheriff and police stations, and fire stations. At its inception in 2005, the program was housed in the State of Oregon's Office of Emergency Management.
It screwed it up.
In the 2013 session, it was transferred to Business Oregon's Infrastructure Finance Authority. In the 2013 legislative session, $30 million were allocated for the program, $15 million for school programs, and $15 million for emergency service facilities. The Infrastructure Finance Authority received 46 applications for that round of funding for the school projects. We received $45.3 million in funding requests for schools. 13 of those school projects were funded and are currently underway or complete. We received 22 emergency service applications for just over $13 million in funding requests for the $15 million allocated. The 2015 legislative session provided $205 million for the program, $175 million for school projects, and $30 million for emergency service buildings. The funds are divided into two different bond sales. The first bond sale is scheduled for this spring of 2016. That's $50 million. All of that is allocated for schools. We just closed the application round for the $50 million round of funding on December 31st. We received 107 applications for just over $123 million in funding requests for the $50 million allocated. Those projects will be reviewed in March. They will be, and the funds will be awarded so that the projects can take advantage of this summer's construction season. The remaining $150 million will be sold in another bond sale in 2017. We expect to open the application period this summer. It will probably close September 30th so that we can be ready for the next bond sale. That will include $125 million for school projects and $30 million for emergency service projects. I'd be pleased to answer any questions you may have.
Do you have anything to say?
Nope.
Okay, so just for clarification, to make sure I have this on the record correctly here, what we're really doing in 1512 is we're doing a technical fix to what we originally thought the intent was. The intent was is to cover both this and the operational, and a portion of it, the lawyers got involved afterwards and decided it wasn't exactly the way they wanted it, so we're doing a technical fix. Am I right here?
Chair Boquist and committee members, that is correct.
Okay. Madam Vice Chair, questions? Senator Courtney.
No, Chair Boquist, you brilliantly have described exactly what this piece of legislation does.
Perfectly type of legislation for this type of session. Technical fixes. Senator Olson.
No, thank you.
Thank you very much. And I believe we have one other individual that is signed up to testify for this. Marshall, I guess, were you signed up for this one? Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Boquist and members of the committee. My name is Marshall Koba, representing the American Council of Engineering Companies. I want to applaud Senator Courtney and Senator Farioli for their leadership on this issue over the many years. We've been a longtime supporter of this concept of retrofitting and preparing essential buildings for the seismic situation that may arise, and I've testified many times. If you want a small piece of history on this, back in 2002, ballot measure 15 and 16, I was the campaign manager, and I believe we were Oregonians for earthquake safety. We went out and we had a budget of $7,500, and we passed two ballot measures to set this process in place, and did a bunch of editorial boards and put a bunch of things in the voters' pamphlet. But $3,750 a piece passed two statewide ballot measures, and I was involved in that. So ACEC supports every and any opportunity to clarify that engineers may be paid, and we are strong supporters of Senate Bill 1512. Thank you.
Questions? Comments? Thank you very much. Okay, colleagues, any questions or discussions on the bill? It's basically a technical fix. We actually, I think, heard portions of this previously. All right, with that, we're going to close the public hearing on SB 12 and open a work session on SB 12. And, Mr. Roper, I believe we have all the paperwork, is that correct? Thank you. Madam Vice Chair.
Chair Boquist, I move Senate Bill 1512 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Madam Vice Chair, Mona Sanders moves SB 1512 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any further discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. With that, we're going to close the work session on SB 1512, and we're going to move to the last item on the calendar and open a public hearing on SB 1524. Okay. Do we have anybody signed up? Colleagues, we're going to stand at ease. We'll come back into order, and where we were before previously, colleagues, is as we were in a public hearing on SB 1524, which you recall is one of our placeholder bills that's out there. If you would please, Mr. Roper, I know you're going next door. Got it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So this was originally a placeholder bill. There's a -1 amendment for this bill now that would exempt 100% permanently disabled veterans from the annual medical examination requirement applicable to medical marijuana card holders. We do have the revenue and fiscal impact statements on this bill, and there's no subsequent referral.
Good representative.
Thank you, Chair Boquist, committee members. John Huffman, State Rep for House District 59. About a year ago, my constituent, Stu Steinberg, from Central Oregon, who is a Vietnam veteran VSO, approached me with a two-pronged request relating to 100% total and permanent. I think that's the combination of wordings. It's very specific. It's not just 100% disabled veterans, but it's permanent and total disability, according to the VA. In relationship to medical marijuana law. So the first prong we were able to do last year, I think it was last year, it could have been the year before, but I think it was last year, we were able to take that population and put them in the lowest annual card fee population. So it put them from $200 a year for the medical marijuana card to $10 a year. And we were able to do that by rule through OHA. This portion of the request, OHA said it's in statute, and so that's why we're here trying to get Stu's final part of that request to remove the requirement for the 100% total and permanent disabled veterans from the requirement of having the annual physical and statement from a physician that's required before you can annually renew your medical marijuana card. And the reason for that is because the VA and physicians have already declared them 100% permanently and totally. And so this roughly $185 a year that they have to go pay a physician to say once again, yes, you are still 100% permanently and totally disabled, give them a statement, they go pay the $10 and get their card renewed. This is just to remove that very, very narrow population and definition from that annual physical, because they already have a permanent physical condition. I've been working with OHA on this. I think there's a joint marijuana task force meeting going on right now, I believe, because the administrator from OHA that's in charge of this couldn't come here because they were going to be in the joint meeting. And based on Senator Mona Sanderson's questions and recommendation, I brought Representative Leininger in on this to make sure that the Joint Committee was aware of it also. The email I got back from Representative Leininger's office sounded like, and so I welcome the committee to reach out and double check, but it sounded like it was very supportive of this. Because we are trying to keep it very narrow, and we're dealing with a very, very limited population. And Stu was supposed to get me those numbers, but the VA has not gotten back with him on exactly how many 100% totally and permanently disabled veterans that have medical marijuana cards would qualify for this. But based on everybody I've talked to, it's just kind of a, does anybody even, it seems like a very, very small population. But so that's the bottom line of what the amendment does.
And what you're saying is it's a veteran service officer from one of the Eastern Oregon counties, one of your counties, that brought forward the concept. And who have you?
That's correct.
And who have you been talking to with OHA?
Rosa Klein. Okay. And the administrator, Andre.
He'll find out.
Aros?
He's new. He can figure out how to dig it out.
And K-L-I-E-N.
This is
yes.
The bill we're talking about.
Yeah. It's the placeholder bill.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So, Your Honor, you talked about permanent total disability and a medical marijuana card, right, Your Honor?
Yes.
So I'm going to read you something here because I am totally lost. Senate Bill 1524 requires law enforcement unit to train public safety officers in veterans issues. Now, Your Honor, I'm not trying to mess you up, so don't go crazy and say I'm a rotten human being. Because I listened intently. I've never heard of this phrase, permanent total. Can you help me? What do you understand that this? I don't know what to do here.
Chair
is it
Boquist?
Me or is it something wrong? I should know, Peter, that is another way of saying permanently total disability and medical marijuana. Is that what this?
Chair Boquist, President Courtney, there's supposed to be some relationship there, but that kind of escaped me, too, and I'm hoping the chair can explain to us what the relating clause connection is.
I don't feel so bad. Thank you, Your Honor. I feel much better.
You're not the only one that's confused.
If you look at line 2 of the bill on the relating clause, it says relating to veterans. Our committee decided to introduce LCs, a legislative concept, to ensure we had a relating clause for all of the catch-all veterans issues.
Let me get the signal.
Madam Vice Chair, comments, concerns,
yes,
questions?
Well, we have this joint marijuana committee, and they have been dealing with things, and they've been sending things to subcommittees. And I have no idea what the rules and regs are going to be regarding medical marijuana or recreational marijuana. And I just want to make sure that they're in the loop, because as a nurse, I would hate to see abuse of this. I firmly believe that anyone with a medical marijuana card should be able to access marijuana. I mean, I've just seen too many people in pain that actually benefit from medical marijuana. But I just need a better sense of that this is copacetic with what the marijuana committee has being done, and I am concerned about the overuse. I don't even know if someone who has a medical marijuana card, I assume you indicated that everyone who has a card has to have a physical once a year.
Yes,
that's for everyone across the board. And I don't know if people with a total and permanent disability at some point in their lives, if their pain does go away. Is it only for pain, or is it for psychological reasons also? I mean,
Chair Boquist and Senator Mona Sanderson, the way Stu described it, there are clients that he has, so he is kind of extrapolating this from his own personal experience with his work with Central Oregon veterans, but PTSD would be one of the challenges that, you know, they could be medicated with this if they so choose. He deals with a lot of folks, too. He, in an email the other day, he described one gentleman that had just passed away from, I think it was pancreatic cancer, some terminal illnesses from folks that were involved with Agent Orange and whatnot, and that's how they acquired the 100% totally and permanently disabled rating. So there are a variety. And I share your concerns. I began working with Oregon Health Authority last year on this and have done my best to try, and I'm reaching out to the Joint Committee on Marijuana. And if there's anybody else that you can think of now or after the hearing that I should reach out to, happy to do so, because that's the way I work. I like to make sure that everybody is aware and on the same page.
Madam Vice Chair, why don't we carry it over till our next meeting, which is Thursday, and we'll ask OHA to come in and make a clarification, and then that'll give us time to circle back around, because I do know, because I have also sent the same inquiry to the co-chairs, and got
silt.
They're busy, but yeah. I'm sure that we have now confident, new, energetic committee staff, and they would be happy to run down those three offices and get us answers for those questions, and then get OHA to come back in here on Thursday.
I can assure you that one of the co-chairs will be in touch with you very quickly.
That's good.
I said one. I didn't say both. Just one.
Okay. It would be nice to hear it from a physician, even a physician from the VA, regarding people who have total and permanent disability. I just don't willy-nilly want to be able to say yes, but man, if someone needs it, man, the $185, if that's the only thing that this person is trying to get out of is paying that $185 per year, to me, someone who is total and permanently disabled, I truly do believe needs to have a fiscal once a year. But I'm not a physician. I'm a nurse.
Chair Boquist and Senator Mona Sanderson, I'm sure they do have. I have my annual VA physical right after session on March 8th. I'm lined up to go in. The challenge with medical marijuana is the VA is a federal agency, and they won't write a letter that says.
So this is what we need to get around. That's why I was wondering, to just blanket say he doesn't need to have his physical, aren't there other ways for him to be able to have a physical without having to pay $185?
And they do get their physical, but not the private physician that would give the letter for the medical marijuana. Other than that, they see physicians probably on a monthly basis at VA.
Senator Cornyn?
I'm okay.
You're okay. Okay, so we will carry this over Thursday and see if we can get some answers to the questions that have come up here. Unfortunately, we have never been able to get someone from the federal VA to come talk to us in the last 4 to 6 years because they don't like talking to state officials. But we can at least work it at a state level.
And Chair Boquist, I'm happy to work with Mr. Roper to make contacts and do whatever we need.
Right. Okay.
Thank you.
And so thank you very much. Appreciate it. Is there anyone else that wants to testify? So if you would, Mr. Roper, we need to reach out to OHA and have them here on Thursday so that they can do that. And then if you would be kind enough to follow back up with the two co-chairs, and I will tell you offline who that is when the tape goes off. So that we have that information along with that way. And then I'd like you to reach out to our state VA, ODVA, and liaisons there so that we get some input in at least our veterans level. And they also may be able to provide clarity in terms of cost and that sort of thing. Because most of these older individuals are probably in the $2,400, $2,500 per month on 100% disabled. And they have TRICARE, which is utterly the most worthless insurance on the face of the planet. And it is exempt from the Affordable Care Act. And since I have it, I can tell you it is utterly worthless. So it is a challenge. I got that.
Okay. Yeah, sure thing.
Anything else on this particular bill? That would close the public hearing. This one will be carried over till Thursday. Anything for the good of the order, Madam Vice Chair?
No.
Senator Cornyn?
No.
With that, we're adjourned for the day. Senator Cornyn?
No.
With that, we're adjourned for the day.